Chapter 25. What was I to think when Yulaha attacked? Jason asked. Despite his frustration, he kept his voice low to avoid disturbing Yulaha or any of the others lying in healing trances in the Yuuzhan Vong nest bunks. It looked as though Anakin had ordered her to, and I'm not the only one who thought so. Fact, Tenelka agreed. She sat hunched into a nest bunk beside him, her shoulder touching his in a manner that was a little more than comfortable. Their lightsabers lay close at hand. With the Voxen still at large in the ship's duct system, they were taking no chances. But you are his brother. What seems a mistake in others is judgmental from you. And your objections to Lando's advice do not help matters. Gamblers and spies can afford to dispense with morality, Jason replied. Jedi cannot. It's too easy for our power to lead us down a dark path, and we're not the only ones who suffer when that happens.
This is so, Tenelka said. But, Jason, do you remember my first lightsaber?
How could I forget? Jason asked, wondering where this was going. Tenelka had made the mistake of building her first lightsaber in a hurry, and a flawed crystal had caused it to fail during a sparring match with Jason. His blade had sliced off her left arm, his first painful lesson in the burden of wielding great power.
For a long time I felt responsible for that accident.
I still do, at least partly. But I don't see what that has to do with Anakin and me.
The accident was no one's fault but mine.
Tenelka tapped her chest with her one hand to emphasize the point.
What I believed to be confidence in my fighting abilities was arrogance, and that is why I built a faulty lightsaber.
Arrogance? Jason repeated. Try as he might, he could not quite see how his mistake resembled Tenelka's. And?
Do you believe you are the only Jedi among us who understands the danger of the dark side?
Of course not. Most of us have had trouble with the Shadow Academy, and Zek even turned— Jason let the sentence trail off, finally comprehending Tenelka's point. Anakin knew the danger of the dark side as well as any of them. To believe him capable of ordering Yulaha's mad attack was to doubt more than his judgment. It was to doubt his very character. Jason shook his head in guilty regret. That was a mistake. A bad one.
Fact.
Tenelka bumped him with her shoulder.
But there is no need to sulk. I will always be fond of you.
Jason's stomach grew hollow. You think he's that angry? Tenelka rolled her eyes, then took a canister of Bacta lotion and slipped off the nest bunk to check on their insensate fellows.
It was a joke, Jason.
Ah. Jason grabbed his lightsaber and followed close behind. Aha! You have a lot to learn about jokes. She glanced at him over her shoulder.
Actually, I thought it quite good.
She came to Yulaha, who was breathing fitfully even in her healing trance, and lifted the Bith's blanket.
Trust him to forgive, Jason, and things will return to normal.
She rubbed a fresh coat of lotion over Yulaha's wounds. It wasn't nearly as effective as immersion in a tank, but it was better than almost anything else they could do for her. On the deck below, a Yuuzhan Vong targeting brain lay open on a wardroom table, its nutrient bath filling the chamber with the stink of rotten seaweed. Nestled in a nut-like shell no larger than a human fist, the organ was a tangle of axons and dendrons webbing together a gelatinous muddle of neuron clusters. Though Jaina found the structure of the biotic computer hopelessly bewildering, Lobaka was engrossed in dissecting the thing, using a small set of steristeel tools to snip here and move there, grunting in satisfaction as the fibers reattached themselves in new locations. Finally, he fused a short thread of axon between two lengths of dendron, then chortled in delight as an eye stalk hanging from the front of the casing rose and focused on Jaina. Lobaka growled a request, which MTD, recently retrieved from the equipment pod, translated as,
"Master Lobaka asks,
if you would be kind enough to circumnavigate the table. Though Jaina understood Wookie well enough to know Lobaka had phrased the request somewhat less eloquently, she did as asked. The eye followed her progress, using a control stem on the back of the shell to spin the brain around as she circled.
"Loe, get some help," Jaina laughed. "That's just Sith."
Lobaka growled a chuckle, then steadied the shell with a big hand and slipped a pair of needle-nosed fiber snips inside. Turning away from the targeting brain, Jaina found Zek waiting with a photon trap from their equipment pod's sensor system. "There weren't any extra detector films in the droid kit," he said. "Maybe we can take a sheet from this and trim one down.
It's worth a try."
Jaina led the way across the wardroom to where 2-1-S stood, silently regrowing his laminanium armor and running internal diagnostics. Since awakening from their healing trances, Jaina, Zek, and Lobaka had been working nonstop to help the war droid repair himself. But 2-1-S still looked like he had grabbed the wrong end of a turbo laser. They had replaced his recessed photoreceptors with extras from the repair kit Lando had included in the equipment pod, but several thud bugs had penetrated deep inside the skull casing, smashing circuit boards and detection mediums beyond all hope of repair. Fortunately, having spent much of his life as an equipment forger in Coruscant's dangerous undercity, Zek had a force-enhanced talent for finding things. So far, he had scavenged substitutes for the infrared and ultrasonic sensors, and now possibly the gamma analyzers as well. Jaina took the thin sheet of detector film from the photon trap and held it up for 2-1-S.
"What about this for your gamma system?"
YVH-21S ran his photoreceptors over the sheet, then crackled, "Affirmative." His voice was a static-filled ghost of Lando's, but that was the least of their worries. "Double the thickness."
"Another success for Zek," Jaina said.
She turned and found herself looking directly into his green two-tone eyes, a sentiment much deeper than friendship evident in the way he held her gaze. Jaina waited a moment for him to look away and, when he did not, passed the detector film back to him.
"Hold this while I get the cutter."
Though hardly blind to the disappointment that clouded Zek's face, Jaina was careful to maintain a neutral expression as she reached for the laser cutter. Her reaction was not because she lacked feelings for Zek. In fact, a few years ago, she had found it difficult to keep her thoughts off him. But over time her feelings had changed from infatuation to something closer to what she felt for her brothers. It was love, certainly, but nothing physical. Nothing like the spark that had passed through her on the Tefanda Bay, when Jag Fel had ignored Borsk Felia's entire cabinet to introduce himself to her. That had made her stomach flutter. But she was being silly. She had no idea where Jag Fel was. Probably not even in the known galaxy, and even less whether they were ever likely to meet again. If she insisted on waiting for a jolt like that again, she would be Mara's age before she ever— "Jaina?" Zek fluttered the detector film in her face. "Are you going to cut or not?"
"Of course, but we need measurements."
Jaina turned away to hide her blush.
"Where did I put that hydro spanner?"
Only a few meters away, crawling on his belly through the black muck in the Exquisite Death's central elimination duct, Tsar 17 heard the hiss of a large creature drawing deep breath. He immediately raised his makeshift durasteel shield and used the force to push it down the low conduit. There was a muffled burp and a loud sizzling as the acid struck, then a dull clang as the shield slammed into the voxen. Sissing with laughter, Tsar used the force to shove voxen and shield down the duct. When the creature snarled and tried to push its snout through the holes, its acid had eaten in the durasteel. The Barabel brought up his blaster pistol and loosed a single bolt. The creature's nose exploded in a spray of black blood, filling the conduit with toxic fumes. Tsar sissed into his breath mask and fired again. The voxen roared and, knocking the makeshift shield from its snout, vanished up the duct. Tsar pictured the beast and reached out to his hatchmates with an impression of movement in his mind.
and of the creature growing larger. A moment later, Bella replied with an image of the creature's body glow. Like most Barabels, she could see into the infrared spectrum, and often tracked her prey by the heat of its body. She sent a sensation of impending danger, and Tisar knew he had to get clear. He retreated 2 meters and squeezed himself into a side feed. He counted 3 slow reptilian heartbeats before a series of whump thumps reverberated through the Yorick coral. The duct lit with the flashing brilliance of his hatchmate's mini-cannons, arranged at right angles to each other at the next intersection, and he had to close his eyes. The Voxen's shrill screech sliced through the dank air like a lightsaber, then dropped in tone and began to undulate. Had they missed? Tisar wondered. How could they? The irritation his hatchmates shot his way convinced him they had not. His earplugs detected a sudden redshift in the Voxen's squeal and closed tight, sealing his ears against the disorienting impact of a compression wave. He experienced a deep, hard vibration in the pit of his stomach, but shared in the exhilaration of his hatchmates as they continued to pour bolts at their prey. By his cold blood, how he loved hunting with his hatchmates. Finally, the mini-cannons fell silent and his earplugs opened again. He flicked his tongue into the breath mask and smelled filter-scrubbed ozone and scorched Yorick coral, and an antiseptic coppery odor he recognized as detoxified Voxen blood. He sent a question sense the sister's way, and received back only an impression of uncertainty. Though Tisar could not exactly feel his hatchmate's actions through the Force, he had lived with them side by side all his life, and intuitively knew they would be activating a glow stick to supplement their infrared vision. An image of smoking scales came to his mind, then of a Voxen's blaster-scorched leg. Then Anakin's voice came over a comlink. Tisar, what's going on back there? The sound of clicking claws sounded from around the corner, and Tisar thought, uh-oh. He worked a hand under his chest up toward the comlink clipped to his collar, at the same time worming his way backward down the duct. It was slow going, for the side feed was little larger than Tisar himself, and he was crawling against the lay of his scales. Even through his thick jumpsuit, the rough walls kept catching the tips and bringing his progress to a painful halt. The Voxen's head appeared at the corner, a red-heat silhouette barely 2 meters in front of him. "Tisar?" Anakin demanded. "What's going on back there?" Tisar fired at the Voxen and saw his bolt ricochet off. He should have scales like that. The creature pulled its head out of sight, but pink heat wisps of breath continued to curl past the corner. Tisar finally reached his comlink. "You told us to watch the Voxen." "And?" "And to call for help if..." The pink wisps vanished ahead, and Tisar heard a sharp intake of air. Keep talking." He ripped his comlink off and tossed it down the duct. Anakin's distant voice continued to demand an explanation, but Tisar squirmed away as fast as he could. A mangled snout pushed around the corner and buried the squawking instrument beneath a weak stream of acid. Tisar stopped moving and, using the Force to project his voice down the duct, screamed as loud as he could. He sensed approval from Kossoff and, through her, perceived Anakin's panic. He had to be on the comlink, screaming for Tisar to answer. Bella found this funny. Tisar could feel her sissing. He knew without looking that she would be creeping down the main duct behind the Voxen, lightsaber in hand. Kossoff was following along behind, a big T-21 repeating blaster pointed over her sister's shoulder. The Voxen hauled itself around the corner, its claws digging into the Yorick coral walls and pulling it forward. Tisar could not see its wounds in infrared, but the creature was definitely moving slowly and in great weariness. It paused at the small pit its acid had burned into the floor, then, not finding the expected body, raised its head and peered down the duct. Tisar resumed his retreat, firing blaster bolts into the creature's head. Many ricocheted off, but many burned through the armored scales and failed to kill it. Wasting no time with another of its screeches, the vauxhawn pursued him down the duct, stubby legs pulling it forward faster than the Barabel could retreat. For the first time, Tisar's scales rippled with fear. The beast learned from its mistakes. Big trouble, he thought. He sensed the alarm in his hatchmates and heard them begin to splash and rattle in the main duct as they tried to draw the vauxhawn's attention. Too clever for such antics, the creature pulled to within a meter of Tisar and let out a burp, but either its acid was depleted or the efflux tube had been burned shut. Nothing came out. Tisar fired point-blank and smelled scorched flesh. The vauxhawn lurched ahead, its mouth closing around the barrel of the Meresan blaster. Tisar squeezed the trigger, then snarled in pain as the safety circuit sensed a clog in the emitter nozzle and shut down the actuating module. Releasing the weapon into the vauxhawn's mouth, he squirmed away, pressing his back against the duct roof in what he felt fairly certain would be a futile attempt to free his lightsaber. Bella's white blade hissed to life somewhere behind the vauxhawn, but the creature filled the duct so completely that only a few stray rays of light showed past. The beast lunged. Tisar barely saved his breath mask by jerking away, then lashed out and felt his finger talons sink into the thing's wounded snout. The vauxhawn continued to drag itself forward, its jaws snapping at the hand clawing on its muzzle. Tisar shoved its head against the wall. Tisar exuded triumph to his hatchmates. A heavy foot came forward to catch his elbow, its disease-tipped claws dimpling his jumpsuit's Molytex lining and nearly pushing through. To his sense of triumph, he added urgency. The drone of Bella's blade grew louder, then vanished beneath the sharp crack of exploding detonite. An unexpected weight settled on Tisar's back, and suddenly the duct was filled with the soft green light of the bioluminescent wall lichen that illuminated the interior of the exquisite death. Tisar glimpsed the tangled mass of broken fang and scorched flesh that was the vauxhawn's mutilated snout, then felt himself rising through the top of the duct as someone levitated him into the cabin above. The blaster-scarred vauxhawn scrambled past beneath him, whole chunks of body missing, the stumps of four rear legs dragging uselessly behind. "You bent the head. It escaped." Tisar looked over and found himself staring into the blue eyes of Ganner Rysode, one of the largest and, to judge by his own attitude at least, most handsome of the human Jedi. "Now it will be twice as hard to kill."
"Hunting season's over, my scaly friend."
Ganner lowered Tisar to the passage floor, then called into the hole. "Come out of there, girls. Anakin wants us on the bridge." In the adjacent sleeping cabin, Rhaenar Thule awoke from his healing trance to find himself watching Errol's bare back as she sat up and stretched on the opposite side of a narrow walkway. Her skin was freckled and milky, with only the faintest hint of the acid scars and claw slashes he had come to know so well during the first vauxhawn watch. With the others deep in healing trances or busy learning to fly the ship, he and Errol had spent a great deal of time talking and rubbing Bacta lotion into each other's wounds. He had a dim memory of a long, lingering kiss just before they finally sank into their own bunks. But it seemed so hazy now it might have been only a dream. Errol lowered her arms and, glancing over her shoulder, caught him looking. Instead of covering up, she smiled and asked,
"How do I look?"
Rhaenar's teeth clacked as he snapped his jaw shut. Then he managed to stammer,
"Fine."
Maybe the kiss hadn't been a dream after all. Just great, in fact. Errol frowned and craned her neck to look down her back, then laughed and, still not covering up, said,
"I was talking about my scars, young man. Are they healed?"
"Oh, yes." Rhaenar wanted to drop back onto his bunk and sink into a healing trance. "That's what I meant." Errol looked doubtful.
"Sure."
She reached for her jumpsuit. "But it's okay. After all that back to rubbing, I don't think anyone on the strike team has any secrets."
"No, I don't think so," Rhaenar said.
Still, as he reached for his own jumpsuit, Rhaenar did try to hide his disappointment. Errol might be only a year or two older, but being called a young man had disabused him of any wrong impressions about their relationship. Tek Lee appeared from a few bunks down, her brown fur tousled and gray eyes sparkling as she buckled her equipment harness.
"Sleep well?" she asked.
"Yes, very," Raynar answered. "And you?"
"Good."
She gave him a tight smile, then lifted her brow as the ship gave a subtle shudder.
"We must be coming out of hyperspace."
Both Raynar and Tek Lee looked to Errol, who closed her green eyes and reached out with the Force. When she opened them a moment later, she looked just a little younger and more innocent than before.
"I have to see some stars to be certain, but it feels right," she said.
"We've reached Mirker,"